This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 24th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 248. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Vancouver City Council kept the 2030 Winter Olympics bid alive. Hear from the lone skeptic on council, Colleen Hardwick, and what she promises to do if she becomes mayor in October. But first, the Is It Just Me commentary. Is it just me, or was that one of the craziest things I've heard all year? July 18th, the issue of bike lanes in Stanley Park came back to the Vancouver Park Board. Phil Rankin was the lawyer for disabled and senior citizens who filed a human rights complaint over the pandemic closure of roads in favor of another bike lane. When it was his turn at the microphone, the son of legendary left-wing politician Harry Rankin didn't call the bureaucrats and politicians at Park Board idiots. He didn't call them imbeciles. So what did he call them? Which I word did he use? Well, listen to this.
We've lost faith in this board. We think it's ideologically driven. I'm obviously in favor of doing something about climate change. I don't care if they put a special fee for people like London for cars to come down. I just think that for recreational purposes, closing the park to cars without having a climate evidence of how much is going to be saved is an injustice to people that are disabled and seniors. I'm also aware that it's because this your board is so ideological that we're seeing your staff as ideological. Your staff is now perceived by
I would like to stop you there. Accusations of staff being ideological are outside the boundaries and scope of what's appropriate considering our code of conduct.
Finish that sentence that we are no longer seeing your staff as universal.
That's your time. You are.
You're cutting my time off. I'm not the senator. I'd like to discuss the five principles, and you can give me some of the courtesy that you're giving to a speaker you agree with. You can give to a speaker you don't agree.
Sir.
You're showing that you're discriminating against me.
Sir,
I'd like to discuss the five principles now instead of show you what my fallacies are. And you've cut me off on several times on this, and I want my 1 minute back. But think about a minute to go through, or we can argue for 5 minutes. Or you can have your sheriff come in here and drag me out. That might be a nice speed for the public as well, because I'm not leaving until I finish. At least in a minute.
I'm going to recess this meeting until we can have a little bit of order, so you can wait for a minute.
Chair Camille Dumont of the Green Party was triggered by Phil Rankin's use of the word ideological. Someone ought to tell Dumont that Section 2B of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms says Canadians have freedom of opinion and freedom of expression. It's a fundamental freedom. And Vancouver voters will exercise their right to vote on October 15th to put park access for all ahead of ideology for some. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Vancouver's 2030 Winter Olympics bid remains alive despite major concerns expressed by Vancouver Deputy City Manager Karen Levitt, who said the city should not move forward until the federal and BC governments decide whether they want to back the bid.
Timing is absolutely, I'd say, the biggest issue before you in this council report. We just don't think there's enough time to do what needs to get done between now and January when the COC will submit their submission for the 2030 bid. And we can do a lot more work, but until we have a timeline very clearly laid out and understanding all the different procedures, decision-making procedures of all the different entities involved, everybody needs to go back to their councils and to make their decisions on their own timelines. We just don't think it's possible with the very significant amount of legal and financial work that needs to get done.
That was Deputy City Manager Karen Levitt at Vancouver City Council's July 20th meeting, where 8 out of 11 members voted to continue supporting exploration of a 2030 Winter Olympics bid with the Canadian Olympic Committee. Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Liliuokwe First Nations, and the resort municipality of Whistler. Salt Lake City and Sapporo, Japan are also considering bids. The International Olympic Committee wants to decide the host in May 2023. Besides the tight timelines, Leavitt said there are too many cost and financial risks. City staff resources are already overwhelmed with day-to-day work and other major events in planning. Another Games would displace the poor and disrupt businesses in Vancouver. Council briefly debated a motion from Councillor Colleen Hardwick to add a plebiscite to the October 15th civic election ballot. In April, nobody else on council supported Hardwick's motion, so the motion died. When Vancouver held a plebiscite in 2003, almost two-thirds of voters said yes to the 2010 Games bid. But in 2018, Calgary voters rejected a bid for the 2026 Winter Olympics. The Canadian Olympic Committee privately told the 2030 bid team to not hold a referendum in 2022. Here is Musqueam Chief Wayne Sparrow and Canadian Olympic Committee President Tricia Smith.
It would squish the bid. I think our representatives went with IOC. That was one of the questions that was addressed. So if we want to stop it, that's the way to stop it. It would completely stop it in its tracks because the IOC is not going to go any further. And I've heard that comment made a couple of times, and I know there was a motion put on the floor before. We didn't have a plebiscite with the FIFA World Cup. We didn't have it on the Invictus game. So sitting there in the back, I'm just wondering where the cutoff is for when we want to do that. So, but that, and in short, I'll let Trisha follow up, but it would stop it in its tracks and not even have any of the work done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. And just to be clear now, the IOC is totally open to plebiscites. They just say, please have the work done before you get to the point where you come to us and say you have a bid ready. So a plebiscite is completely acceptable. What it does, though, is it takes what we've been engaging in is this Indigenous-led process, which is a dialogue. It's you can hear about the public engagement if you wish to do so. We have the person that manages public engagement here because there's been extensive public engagement so far. But that's the Indigenous process. So it would be taking this process out of the Indigenous-led process and saying, we don't agree with that way anymore, and we're going to do it the way we think it should be done.
Here is Councillor Colleen Hardwick tabling the motion.
This is my amendment to add a vote to the ballot in October, asking the electorate if, as you can see under D, yes, I support the City of Vancouver participation. No, I oppose the City of Vancouver participation. This is exactly the same question that was given in the 2003 plebiscite in the lead up to the 2010 Olympics. We have the advantage now that we can get this on the ballot for October 15th. When I did put this in for staff comments, the comments that I received back were things like the size of the font. And I just wanted to touch on the fact that this does not in any way violate the MOU. And I just want to be really clear about that because it has come up in questions earlier. Reconciliation, we are a city of reconciliation and we embrace that, but that doesn't preclude our responsibility to our electorate. And as you'll recall, in 2010, there was, or the 2003 one rather, leading to 2010, there was 65% support. And that gave the kind of demonstrated public community support that tipped the needle, moved the needle in terms of the city's ability to get the games. So I don't know why we would be, what we have to be afraid of consulting the public about this. I overwhelmingly heard from the public that they want to have a voice in this. And this is something that we can do. And again, I'm not exactly sure how our responsibility to our electorate got confused with being a city of reconciliation. That was never my intention, and I just wanted to go on the record as saying that. But I do believe that it's important. Something like, this is not the Invictus Games. This is not the FIFA World Cup. This is the Olympics. This is a $4 billion price tag and a lot of risk attached to it. And I think the responsible thing for us to do is to give the Vancouver electors a chance to have their say.
Mayor Kennedy Stewart led the opposition to Hardwick's motion more than 2 years after he said an Olympic bid referendum would be mandatory. Earlier in July, the integrity commissioner at City Hall said Stewart broke the code of conduct when he wrongly accused Hardwick of violating the bid exploration agreement. This time, after it was tabled, councillors on the left and on the right voted against holding a plebiscite.
It would be ticking the no box if this goes ahead.
I'm waiting. What I'd really like to have actually is the books from the 2010 Olympics that are embargoed at the archives until 2025. Because making decisions without having that kind of underlying understanding and such a big decision runs counter to my decision-making experience. But I'm not willing to say one way or the other, and that's not the point. Just as it was stated by Councillor DeGenova when she made her amendment, it was not whether we're for or against. It's about doing the right thing.
I'll be voting against this, Chair. Although this may not formally violate the MOU that we signed, in my opinion, it certainly violates the spirit of the MOU. It violates and undermines all the efforts we put in toward reconciliation on this project, the good faith agreements that we've had.
The committee meeting's chair was Adrian Carr of the Green Party. In 2003, Councillor Carr opposed the 2010 bid and was part of the No campaign while she was leading the BC wing of the party.
Okay, that amendment fails. With myself, Mayor Stewart, Councillors DeGenova, Fry, Swanson, Weeb, Boyle, Dominato, Bly, and Kirby Young in opposition.
In the end, only Councillors Colleen Hardwick and Jean Swanson were voting against the amendments to Levitt's report.
I've been involved in shows before that the stars have not lined up, the risks have been too great, and we've had to pull the plug. So I know, as unpleasant as it can be, that sometimes you have to do that. In principle, I am not going to support this. I know it's going to pass easily. But I have great misgivings about our ability in this council to sideline staff advice in this case, which is sound. And I also am struggling with the democratic deficit that I'm seeing here and have seen otherwise. So. Out of principle, I will be voting in opposition.
Why is it legitimate to spend $500 million for Olympic security and not build housing for Indigenous people and not end homelessness on Hastings Street? I would love to award an Olympic medal to somebody who would do those things. I would be really excited if we could do those things. I would be more excited if we could do those things than if we could win an Olympic medal. A lot of being on council is about priorities. Are we going to be able to fund that Indigenous Women's Healing Center if we spend a whole bunch of money on the Olympics? We need to know the answer to that question. We could implement a lot of UNDRIP for just the Olympic security car. And we wouldn't have tens of thousands of people flying around in airplanes spewing greenhouse gases in the very year that we're supposed to have reduced our greenhouse gas emissions by 50%.
Councillor Sarah Kirby Young of the ABC party, who was a former tourism industry marketing executive, was the biggest booster of the bid at the council table.
There are some serious questions that need to be answered around indemnification, right? And who takes that on? Is that shared? What's the risk and the comfort level? And so even and I'm, for me, I have some comfort as elected official that people are hearing us ask those questions, and all the partners are acknowledging that those are important questions and serious issues that have to be addressed. It's not a sort of move forward at any cost, but it is a, we are excited about this opportunity. We don't want to close the door on possibility that, you know, that Olympics can have, and it's pretty inspiring. And everybody was here through 2010. I was really privileged in my work in the past games to be part of the different teams from the destination partners and from then Destination BC and others to go to Beijing on a reconnaissance and have that experience of what it was going to be like 2 years later to host the games. And really, it's actually hard to speak about how it brings a community together and the catalyst that it is. And I think that I get the fact that we've come off of 3 really hard years of COVID and people are tired and there's a lot going on. But I also know, boy, do we need something to lift us up too.
And listen to what Councillor Adrian Carr said after the vote was tallied, and hear what Musqueam Chief Wayne Sparrow had to say in reply.
We are now to referred onto referred item. Do you want to take a little break? Should we take 10 minutes? A tiny little celebration?
I just want to thank you guys on behalf of leadership. I know the decisions are happening. I know I've heard a couple of times about the election. I'm hoping that doesn't get into a campaigning thing that when we're working together. And I just want to acknowledge all the hard work that you and wish you guys, hope you guys have a good summer. Good luck in the election.
While Musqueam Chief Wayne Sparrow hopes the 2030 Winter Olympics bid is not an election issue on the road to October 15th, Councillor Colleen Hardwick is going to make sure that it is. Hardwick is running in the October 15th civic election as the mayoral candidate for the Team for a Livable Vancouver party. She joins me on the Breaker.News podcast. Why do you think the rest of council went in the direction it did instead of listening to the sober second thought offered by Deputy City Manager Karen Levitt?
Well, Bob, I think it goes back to when I first brought the motion forward to conduct a plebiscite or a ballot vote on October 15th. And as you recall, I had gone through the staff input on council motion process over several weeks, which just led to concerns about what size of font would be on the ballot to do this plebiscite. But when it went public on the city's website, there was a news item that was written about it, and the mayor tweeted out that my motion violated the MOU with First Nations, and then went on through a series of tweets to say that he wouldn't second it, and by, you know, reference that no one else should and no other member of council should support this, and then ultimately went on to say that this was an anti-reconciliation. And as you know, I placed a complaint with the Integrity Commissioner because it was, and she also found that my motion did not, in fact, violate the MOU. But what this all did was set the stage for a narrative that has been perpetuated, and that is that in some way, having a plebiscite was going to be anti-reconciliation, which is clearly not the case. So what I observe of the rest of council, the mayor set the tone, and regardless of the fact that he was found to have been expressing untruth, it has continued. And the sad result of that is that the people of Vancouver will not have a say in whether or not the bid to conduct the Olympics moves forward or not.
The leaders of the four host First Nations who are involved, each of them are democratically elected. And there was also a plebiscite for City of Vancouver voters in 2003 before the IOC chose Vancouver. So there is democracy exercised within these First Nations, and there is a historical precedent that Vancouver has held a plebiscite before it hosted its first Winter Olympics. Yet in this case, politicians have bent over backwards to prevent one from happening.
Well, one can only ask the question, why? What are they afraid of? I would surmise that they think that by having a plebiscite or a ballot vote, that they run the risk of it having been turned down. Now, as you know, in 2003, 65% of voters voted in favor. And I recall at the time there was some concern that it would not pass, but it did, and it did handily. And by doing that, it gave it legitimacy. No one could turn around and say, you didn't have the support of the people. And this is one of the risk considerations that Karen Levitt put in the report to council, a degree of public support. Well, we don't know what that degree of public support is, and we're being prevented from expressing it.
Now, you are also running for mayor, and will you make this part of your debate and platform in October?
Absolutely. There's still time. It'll be even a shorter timeline. I would have preferred to have had it on the ballot because we could have killed several birds with one stone by putting it on the ballot. And we know that we'll get a higher turnout at the election than we would in a standalone plebiscite. But notwithstanding, I think it's become symbolic of the democratic deficit that is being experienced in the city of Vancouver and more broadly. Because I remind us that we don't elect our dictators, we elect our representatives. And what I observed here is not representative of the people of Vancouver.
So if people vote for you and Team for Livable Vancouver in October to defeat Kennedy Stewart and you become mayor, you will do something similar to what Larry Campbell did in 2003 and give people a chance to vote?
100%. Now, of course, I would also like to be informed by the data, the books from the 2010 Olympics. As you know, they are embargoed at the city archives and Vanier Point. And this remains a serious concern of mine because making decisions absent the records of the past Olympics is, you know, and I don't know where one makes that level of decisions. In this case, we're looking at a $4 billion price tag as advertised now without the benefit of past information on the last Olympics. I mean, I would like to find some way to out that data in order to be able to inform our decision, but notwithstanding, the people deserve to have a voice in whether or not we move ahead with the Olympics.
So there you have it. Councillor Colleen Hardwick says that if she is elected mayor, Vancouverites will get a chance to vote for or against the 2030 Winter Olympics bid. Follow thebreaker.news for more coverage of the 2030 Winter Olympics bid. And what do you think? Email Bob, thebreaker.news. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, video shows Taiwanese singer Jimmy Lin's Tesla burst into flames. His Tesla collided with a signpost in Taiyuan City. It bruised Lin and his son, and they were rescued from the car. Members of the public shot video showing the white sedan bursting into flames and posted it to social media. Just prior to the accident, Lin was driving with his son on Zhongzheng Road. He made a U-turn, veered to the outside lane, rolled over a median, and slammed into a steel signpost. In Kyoto news, Japan's daily COVID-19 count sets record for third straight day. Japan's daily coronavirus cases exceeded 190,000 on Friday, hitting a new record for the third consecutive day. No new restrictions, but to keep the economy going, the government has decided to cut the self-isolation time for people identified as close contacts, to 5 days from 7 days. In the Hong Kong Free Press, unfair and racist, chair of Macau Domestic Workers Union slams government order for all Filipinos to take COVID-19 tests. The city recorded almost 6,000 COVID-19 infections and 6 deaths as of Thursday, according to Macau's Center for Disease Control and Prevention. The Philippines consulate in Macau, however, defended the city's requirement and urged Filipinos to comply. There are around 30,000 Filipinos in Macau, according to the consulate. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News
news podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Oregon Shakespeare Festival cancels shows due to unprecedented COVID case numbers. All performances this week of The Tempest, Revenge Song, Unseen, Dr. G's Bingo Extravaganza, and The Green Show have been canceled. Once on This Island and How I Learned What I Learned are scheduled to go on with planned performances. About 15% of the performing and understudy company has been infected as the new BA5 variant spreads. In the Seattle Times, long-delayed project across from City Hall in Seattle on hold once again. Canadian developer Bosa said Friday it is pausing work on the Civic Square project across the street from Seattle City Hall because of rising construction costs and uncertainties in the broader construction market. The developer said it made the decision, quote, after completing additional due diligence and weighing current construction market conditions, end quote. In 2017, Bosa agreed to pay $16 million for the land and at least $5.7 million in affordable housing fees. The company agreed to include a public plaza at the site. Bosa finally began work on the project this spring. Its plans include an upscale 57-story condo tower, 6 levels of underground parking, retail space, and the public plaza. In Czech news, completely absurd. RCMP seek suspects who poured oil and paint inside vehicles. According to a recent press release from the RCMP, the incident happened on July 10th at around 2:30 a.m. in the Comox Valley. The release did not state where exactly the incident took place. However, Mounties say the two suspects poured oil all over the driver and passenger seats of the vehicle and coated the interior of the vehicle with white powdery paint. Quote, this appears to be a random, completely absurd act of mischief, end quote, said Constable Monica Terrany. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar. Brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to public health nurses and your friendly neighborhood pharmacists. It's the 7th wave of the pandemic in British Columbia, and these are the people who are putting shots in arms to protect against COVID-19. Thank you for your service. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast. For the week of July 24th, 2022, I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 24th of July in 1935, the Dust Bowl heat wave peaked at 43 degrees Celsius in Chicago, and on July 24th in 1967, French President Charles de Gaulle told a Montreal rally, Vive le Québec libre! It was Canada's centennial year and Montreal's expo year, and Anglophones across Canada were not amused. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.